It's Thought Leader Thursday. Brett McKittrick is here from Associated Bank. This morning we're going to talk a little bit about financial health at work and some other HR-related items. Brett is SVP and Senior HR Consultant at Associated Benefits and Risk Consulting. And Brett, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Thanks, Steve. Great to be back.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the compensation we've been getting. There's been a lot of attention paid to bonuses that have been handed out since the tax cuts went into effect, and that versus pay raises. Tell us about what is in the news more. Is it the pay raises or the bonuses?
You know, it's the bonuses, and sort of unfortunately. I say that because since 2009, when the recession was in full swing and employers looked to cut costs, they stopped doing what? Giving merit increases and bonuses. Now, as the economy has picked up and we're seeing things like tax reform put more money back into corporations' pockets, we're seeing some of that trickle down to more income and salary for the employee, but we're seeing it in the form of bonuses instead of wage increases. And that's not as good for employees from the simple fact that a wage increase, you know, capitalizes on itself, right? And it's progressive. And from a long-term financial security standpoint, any employee would rather see that instead of a one-time bonus. Bonuses are taxed at a higher withholding rate. And so that's less money in that employee's pocket at that point in time in which they receive that bonus.
Okay, a couple of things. I didn't know that. Repeat that again.
So the withholding rate for most bonuses is higher than the withholding rate for salary. Now, that doesn't mean it's necessarily taxed more at the, you know, when the true up at the end of the year when a person files a 1040, depending on what their income level actually is, you know, they may get some of that money actually back. But at that time in which they're receiving that bonus, they're technically getting a little less than what they would have as in terms of a salary increase or normal pay.
So, if you know, a lot's been in the news lately about $1,000 bonuses to folks. What does that end up being, like $900, $800 after more withholding?
Yeah, it's a little less.
Yeah. And this is interesting, too, because with the last jobs report, we paid a lot of attention to wages in that report. But the bonuses aren't included in that wages part of that report.
That's correct.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. And so that's a little misleading in and of itself to see that. And you see, and really this is a cause of, or one of the many causes of what the phenomenon is referred to as wage stagnation. Mm-hmm. We're not seeing a lot of those increases across the board because of the bonuses. And unfortunately, this might be a sign of things to come.
Meaning that this could be the way it happens from here on out. Instead of getting a pay raise, we get a bonus.
Yeah.
Talk to us a little bit about what we might be able to do from an employee standpoint if we get one of the bonuses versus a pay raise. Is this something that's negotiable with employers?
Well, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, we've come to a point where a lot of employees, those that were employed during that recessionary time or maybe who became unemployed during that time, they're coming back and we're part of them, many employees are still in the mindset of, I'm happy to have this job. Now, we see that change from a generational perspective. We've certainly talked about generational implications in the workplace in the past. And when we see newer employees come into the workforce and maybe that younger generation may be more accustomed to setting their own terms, they could push more for those merit-based increases. The problem is we're looking at what's referred to as more of a gig economy. We're seeing more contract workers. We're seeing people paid more in a piecemeal fashion instead of that salary or hourly wage. And as a result, bonuses, fit that structure a little more easily.
And if this is going to be the way things are in the future, with the job market tightening, this could be one of those things where you leave a job and go find somebody who's going to actually give you a pay raise.
It's possible, yes.
Yeah. Let's talk about the other part of the news recently. Pay equity has been in the news. Some companies have started reviewing their policies. Mm-hmm. How does that even begin at a company?
How does a company begin to review?
To review pay schedules versus men versus women.
Sure. Well, a company first has to acknowledge that there is a problem. It might not be a problem in that particular organization, but they have to do some studies and wage analysis to see if it really is a problem. There's a study, and you may be getting to this, but I want to mention it now, a Stanford study where they looked at pay equity in Uber. And they took 2 years of Uber drivers, right? And this is the epitome of that gig economy, more or less quote-unquote contract workers that are paid as W-2 employees by Uber, right? Mm-hmm. And They looked at 2 years' worth of drivers, men and women, and found that there was a 7% disparity between what a male driver made versus what a female driver made. Male driver made a higher rate. Now, the Uber system is based on a gender-neutral algorithm of pay. There's a million things that go into that algorithm. So what the Stanford study looked at is, why is this happening? And there were a bunch of different factors, some of which, you know, things that we typically or may think of stereotypical. Men drive 2.2% faster than female drivers. So over the course of a year, a male driver can pick up more riders than a female driver. Thus, they might make a little bit more money. Mm-hmm. Men typically work more on undesirable shifts in the evening. And men would do longer trips such as airport shuttles, things of that nature, which were, you know, cause a higher increase in terms of what they are being paid. Suffice to say, what the Stanford study found is there's no one single issue as to why or reason as to why men made 7% more than women at Uber. It wasn't designed to be that way. And so what you end up having is a company that maybe identifies a disparity in pay, but it takes a lot to really solve it because there's no one single issue causing that.
Yeah, and in that case, it seems the solution seems harder because unless women are going to be driving those other shifts, doing more of that work. But on the flip side, I mean, aren't women safer drivers? So you have fewer accidents with women.
Yeah, you would think so. Yeah. That's true as well.
Review that we had Challenger Grand Christmas on the program recently, and they talked about 48% of companies are actually doing this review. So business mm-hmm. offices are interviewing managers in their companies and also going even to some employees and saying, hey, here's what we're doing. Is transparency the key here to making sure this goes smoothly in a workplace?
I think it's a big step in the right direction. You know, when you're that transparent, you are acknowledging, if you find that there is a problem and say pay disparity, you're acknowledging that problem and you're upfront about it. And even as you're investigating that problem, I think it sends a message to employees that you care.
I know the Me Too movement has been a big driving factor in the reexamination of some of this. But the other part of it, if you look at the data, women are re-entering the workforce at really big numbers over the last year or two.
Sure.
And so how has that impact the review of all of this going on and the movement forward?
Well, you know, part of it is, and again, this is another potential cause of that pay disparity. When female employees re-enter that workforce, oftentimes it's after taking time off through the birth or adoption of a child, and they want to stay home with the kids for a little bit of time, right? Well, when they come back in, there's a gap in there, obviously, in terms of that work experience. And they may be coming back in at a lower wage than what they normally would be at if they had kept working for that period of time. The problem is, are they coming back in at a lower wage than a similarly qualified male employee coming in at that similar time off?
You recently did some presentations on financial wellness in the workplace.
Yeah.
What are we talking about there?
So, you know, we all are aware of health wellness, right? Mm-hmm. And employee well-being as a whole. And what's become a really hot topic in this area is that holistic approach to employee well-being, which really includes financial wellness. And if you entertain this quick study that was done by the American Psychological Association, they surveyed, I think, around 5,000 employees all over the United States. This was a couple of years ago, by the way. And these employees were all in different industries, public and private sector alike. And they asked these employees a bunch of different questions really about themselves. And I want to focus on three of the questions they asked. One of the questions they asked was, do you consider yourself to be obese or not? One of the questions asked, are you a tobacco user or not? And then the third question that was asked, again, is among a multitude of questions, was, do you consider yourself to be financially stressed during your work time? Hmm. 20% consider themselves to be tobacco users. 30% consider themselves to be obese. 70% identified themselves as having financial stress at that time at work. Well, think about how many resources and money we pour into health wellness at workplaces. And what are the two biggest factors they focus on? The two highest risk factors to a person's health.
Yeah.
Tobacco usage and obesity. Well, That's only covering 20 and 30% of your entire population. Right. I'm not saying we shouldn't focus on that, but when we but we're missing the boat on that 70%. Well, what's the problem with missing the boat on that 70%? That financial stress in the workplace can manifest itself in a number of different health concerns for that particular employee, as well as absenteeism and presenteeism, right? When that person should be doing their job, they're thinking about their own finances. If organizations can meet that employee at their particular place of need, which in this area might be financial concern, then they're doing a better job of enabling that employee to succeed in the workplace.
So, you know, the first two of those, you can offer exercise programs, smoking cessation. How do you address the financial wellness part of that if you're the employer?
Yeah, it's much more complicated because that financial stress can come from a number of different things. You know, it could be debt from the employee. It could be other financial woes in terms of, am I saving enough for retirement? So, you know, an employer is only the employer. How paternal or maternal can that employer really be, and how much behavioral change can they influence? And should it even be their role to influence in that regard? And so I think an employer can offer educational programs, resources, and things to help that employee, again, meet them at their place of need to usher them into a place of better financial security.
I would imagine that this is a tightrope that the employer walks, because you want to encourage all of the things, the health that you've talked about. But at the same time, I would imagine that an employee might feel a little uneasy talking about their finances.
Yeah. In our space, we talk about the idea of wellness programs. Are you doing them for an employee or to an employee? Mm. And so in that regard, an employee might feel like, hey, this is really invasive. And it's also hard to find an employee champion in this regard. You know, think about health. If you can prop an employee up and they're happy to tell their story about how maybe you saved them from a heart attack by helping them change their diet and active lifestyle. Well, what employee is going to go up and say, hey, I was almost in bankruptcy. Look at me now. You know, systemically and socially, it's a very different animal.
But it can be done. There are examples of it being done in places like, there are people that have stood up that said, hey, listen, this did nearly happen to me, and they've pulled other people up with them, haven't they?
Yeah, it is possible. And really, it comes back to the culture of the organization. Mm-hmm. First of all, if an employer engages in any type of employee well-being or wellness program, it can't just be looking for a return on that investment, because you might not find it, or it might take a long time to find it. It's got to be culturally relevant within your organization, and you as an organization philosophically have to really believe in that. And once you do, it is important, to your point, Steve, of finding that employee champion, finding those voices amongst your employees, because that just promotes the buy-in.
I'm guessing this might be an area ripe for a third party to come in and do it anonymously, so that the employer and employee never have to have this conversation.
Yeah, much like on the health side. Yeah. You know, we have protected health information, mm-hmm. so an employer engages in a third party to help them on that. This isn't protected in the same way, maybe from a regulatory perspective, but from a sensitivity perspective, it is.
The end result is making sure you have a happy, healthy workforce, and the benefits are great for employers to do that.
It really is. And going back to our earlier discussion about wages and bonuses, right? This is another way for employers to really differentiate themselves and become that employer of choice. If recruitment and retention is important to that employer, you do, to your point, want to make that employee feel comfortable in the workspace and be effective and have a chance to further their own career. Well, the best way to do that is meeting them at their place of need, which benefits can be a big provider for.
Brett, before we leave you, I know we've talked before about the tax plan taking effect and our taxes coming up. People have probably already seen whatever bump they're going to get, right, in their paychecks from the tax bill.
Yeah.
And so they need to focus on what as tax time approaches.
For the employee, the individual?
The individual.
Yeah. You know, I think, number one, you know, most everyone has a tax preparer or uses software.
Right.
Right. You know, so all of these systems have and processes are in place to encompass those new tax laws. I think the big thing for employees to focus on now is the withholding.
Yeah.
And from that perspective, you know, without coming up in 2019 without having the deductible expenses, what that's going to look like for that employee from a personal finance perspective.
You don't want to get caught with a big tax bill in 2019.
Exactly.
Brett, it's good seeing you. We'll talk to you again next month. lot.
All right. Thanks a lot, Steve.
Brett McKittrick is Senior Vice President and Senior HR Consultant at Associated Benefits and Risk Consultant. It's the Associated Bank Thought Leader Thursday segment. You can hear it, of course, every Thursday, but also our past Thought Leader conversations are always online at WGNRadio.com. You can also head over to AssociatedBank.com/Thought Leadership to meet more of our thought leaders and hear more thought leader conversations.